Took a tree kick down the canyon on the tee shot of hole 9. No one finer as a whiner than this grumbling guest of mine on the Fish Golf Broadcast.
On this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast, I sat down with Craig Cutler. Craig, what you thinking about?
Well, thanks for reaching out, Andrew. Happy to meet up with you today and talk a little bit about Warwick Disc Golf and eight-tier events that we've been running for over a decade. And, you know, our goal to promote regional pro disc golf in the area.
Yeah, so Craig, a lot of my guests probably don't know who you are. I guess you have the misfortune of being the second best player in Steve Brinster's region for the last 20 years or so. So you have been heavily involved in the Warwick Disc Golf Championships, previously Animal Fest, maybe previously other names too. And that's one of my favorite regional A-tiers. It's about 4 hours from my house in New York. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like being one of the early A-tiers, or what the culture of the Warwick Club was like as those early A-tiers were happening?
Sure. So I started playing disc golf when I was 20 years old, and I was introduced to disc golf by my college roommate. I went to college at William Patterson University in Northern New Jersey, and my college roommate was from Huntington Beach, California, and introduced me to disc golf. We drove to a local course, and that's where we started to meet people like Dan Doyle, Scott Wolf, Steve Brinster, and disc golf really, you know, it struck with me with my competitive nature. And so from that point, I really took off and started to go to tournaments. And all the tournaments in that time in the area were run by Dan Doyle. Dan and Steve built the Breakwell Warwick course. And from, I believe, 1999 to the ramp up to about 2005, it went from C-tiers all the way to a national tour event. And I played in the first Skylands National Tour event. And it was actually like a breakout tournament for me where I got fourth in a national tour and was lucky enough to play with Ken Climo my first round on the short-to-short layout. And I just hit every putt and actually beat Climo in a round. So that was kind of like a highlight of my early disc golf life career. And I really got the itch from that point to get involved with tournaments. Just a little, you know, I think we ran two or three national tour events. Dan Doyle was really the lead on that with, you know, the help of the Brinsters, Steve Brinster and Leslie Brinster and others in the club. But we quickly learned that model was very unsustainable.
What about it?
What about unsustainable?
Yeah.
Our club is 98% amateurs. The NT catered to pros, mostly not from our area. So it was a lot of stress to the locals to try to get this event pulled off correctly with little reward for the locals besides getting to see their favorite players for a day or two.
Sure. And I guess like thinking about what the modern disc golf tour is like, maybe that's not that different than pro tour events where many of the locals can't get into the event. And it's a huge lift to get like 1 week of exposure for your course or your local scene.
Totally. It's a huge lift and it requires lots of cash. So back in that time, Dan Doyle leveraged his business relationships to raise thousands of dollars. I mean, it basically really came out of Dan's pocket. It's Steve and Leslie pounding the pavement, picking up sponsors. We learned that model is just unsustainable for the long term. But at the same time, we felt really strongly about keeping a tradition of a top-notch tournament going year after year. Personally, when I was learning to play and getting competitive, I would travel to, you know, the Jersey Jam or the Yetter. And I loved these events. They were all brought out all the best regional pros. And they would go for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And then the next year they'd become maybe a C tier and with no attendance. And
right.
I really made a promise to myself and the club that I wouldn't let this happen to Warwick. I wanted to keep the prestige of this event, you know, where it was. And so when that's kind of led into our decision not to go for like a Pro Tour Silver Series or anything higher and just do a good job with the A tier, but not overextend ourselves.
And I think that's a really honorable goal that you've kind of figured out, because those regional events, the Seneca Soiree, the Yetter Cup, the Philly Open, the Jersey Jam, in a lot of cases, they've disappeared entirely because the tournament directors didn't have somebody to help them enough with fundraising or running the actual event. Or for the Yetter, it took a step back when the course got decimated by some tree damage in the park. Seneca Soiree was a thing. It was running sustainably as a B tier, I think, until COVID happened. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of reasons that these mid-Atlantic tournaments haven't been able to keep it going. So it seems like you and your local club have figured out that raising just over the minimum, running a 2-day, 4-round event, kind of with no frills, no media, is like your lane. It's almost like you know your place as a tournament. You're not trying to be anything more than you are.
Yeah. So one thing about our club is that we've been felt really strongly about our club being in control of our courses. And we've really been, I don't say tough, but just strong on disc golf companies or disc golf proprietors getting in our area to try to run events for profit on our courses. And, you know, that's a double-edged sword, because if you have a disc golf business or proprietor who's willing to run events, well, you can turn the event over to that person. They can do a lot of the fundraising through their business and help fund the event. Since we kind of feel strongly about having the club being the priority in the area, that all falls on the club. So over time, with communicating to our AM base of like why we think a pro-only event is important, we were able to have the club make a donation to the A tier every year between $750 to $1,000. The club also approves us to compensate a TD and volunteers for that day, which is super important to avoid TD burnout. So that, you know, we've raised, you know, maybe 200, 300 plus money, cash for a TD for the day, the day or two, along with annual sponsors that I write letters to and choose kind of businesses that local disc golfers support and for that relationship. That's how we get to that 3,500 and, you know, keep the structure in place.
Sure. That makes sense. And I know that when I have gone to the Warwick A tier, y'all have pushed going to a couple of the businesses downtown on the main strip, and I'm never the only disc golfer in there. It's kind of like there is a feedback loop of loyalty that's perceived among the longtime attendees of the event. I think that works in a place that's kind of small and remote like Warwick, but it doesn't work in like going to Portland or something where there are infinite options of places to go. It's almost like y'all are able to be noticed as long as soccer's not going on.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's a good point. So, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years. So over time you build relationships. There are people who want to support us. you know, we, and we want to support them. So we have a sponsor sheet with offers where if you sponsor the A tier, you get a T sign for a year on the course. Plus you get social media mentions. Our Facebook page has over 1,800 members. So we put out advertisements and recommendations throughout the year. So it seems to work for that $3,500, $4,000 level. A lot of the years I wish that we could raise more. I'd love to throw a boatload of cash at the FPO division to try to attract Missy Gannon back to the event, other regional pros. But that, you know, that's hard. That becomes more of like a side job for me. And again, it's trying to maintain that balance so I don't get super burnt out, but the event can keep going how it is.
Yeah, for sure. So looping back to something you had said, your club is well over 90% amateurs, and there's kind of this, there's an understanding that running a pro-only event is important to the local scene. It seems like the Warwick Amateur Championships have grown up a little bit in the last few years also. And I know that's not specifically your undertaking, but does that feel like it's an appropriate compensation for an event where the courses are closed and the club is making a donation to pros who mostly aren't from the region?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's interesting. In the beginning, there was this kind of resentment from AMS that no money from AMS should be siphoned off to be put into pro pockets, right? That was something that was always a part of disc golf when I started for the first decade. Now that we have the Disc Golf Pro Tour and disc golf is huge, amazing, successful sport, that mindset has changed a little bit. But that was really difficult for us to overcome. We always got negative feedback about that. You know, people didn't want the club to kick in for added cash, so on and so forth. So that mindset has changed. And the amateur event, which happens to be this weekend, the club also supports that event in the form of, you know, Dan Doyle offers his property, there's players' parties, so on and so forth. So it is somewhat of compensation. And that event would not exist without Ryan Kenny and Joe Apples, who are really great volunteers for the club. But both of those events really motivate our 180 so club members to get the courses ready, have new tee signs, new baskets. So I feel like we've hit like a kind of almost perfect equilibrium of happiness from AMs and pros to all come together to have these two events.
I'm Eric Oakley, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I think about what I'm going to do for a Klondike bar.
I'm Kona Montgomery, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I sit and be pretty as passenger princess.
If you like where this show is headed, stick around for part two. We'll never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads to start the show. So please support the Fish Golf broadcast by visiting discgolfbra.com for hats and other apparel. Fish stamp discs are available at fishdiscgolf.com and daddydiscgolf.com, and you can save 10% on upperparkdiscgolf.com with the code Andrew10 on backpacks and other items. And now, more lies and outrageous claims from our guest, met with calm reason by Fish.
Has there been any agitation from local folks to make one or the other events larger? Like, are there folks who think we could be Pro Tour ready or something like that?
There's been discussion about trying to apply for a Silver Series on a Disc Golf Pro Tour level. We don't think the Animal Course, the Breakwell Steel Course, is big enough or maybe challenging enough to have one round per day. There are a few changes that we have thought about to possibly to modify the course or add a new pin position, but that affects two of the most ideal, premier holes, like holes 14 and 15 on the course. And we don't want to change that because they're so great how they are now to the normal 1,000 rated player or 980 rated player. To modify the course for a 1040 rated player is just, the club doesn't really have that appetite right now.
Yeah, and it's kind of like if you go making those changes for one event, someone's going to want to play it daily, and then it can't play in the regular configuration because you've got crossing fairways, et cetera, et cetera. So do you feel like you or Ryan or Joe or other folks are able to be the voice of reason to some of the players who don't get the full scope of what it would take to run that much larger event?
I think now that the fans and the players and myself would love to see that event happen. The added cash is daunting. We would really have to get together as a club and say, look, all of our monthlies, all of our little doubles events, we need to raise money at each of these events to get this added cash up to an acceptable level. And I think that would be the major effort to rally everyone around that idea.
Sure. And that might work for 1 year, but at some point it becomes way too much to do year after year, especially as the Pro Tour expectation for added cash from the local club is increasing.
Correct. Yeah. And originally when we had discussed this, and I'm sure the policy has changed, but you're right, the added cash from the local club was expected. So was a lot of the management of the event. And it just seemed too overwhelming, again, from all volunteers. And, we don't have someone who has a disc golf business who would be willing to we could outsource that to. It's all of us who are just, working regular jobs and have families and so on and so forth.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess there have been a couple other A-tier events that have endured, like the Greater Hartford Open, and there have been some new ones that have popped up fairly close to you, like the Mindkill Disc Golf Championships. I'm sure you remember, was it the Mid-Atlantic Regional Tour?
I do.
Yeah. Has there been any discussion among some local TDs of trying to revive something that resembles that? Because the reason I ask, I feel like the Disc Golf Pro Tour has kind of put a clamp on regional tours, and they've put a clamp on like the regional pro because all of the touring players who are good enough are, they're off on the tour. Mm-hmm. And there's not really there's not a tour system in most regions that makes like geographic or temporal sense. It's kind of just like scattershot throughout the year. Do y'all have any coordination with some of the other TDs in the region to think about what that might look like over a few years?
It's a great idea. We're all friends. Jason Lasasso and Jessica are, running this Mind Kill event, which is amazing. If you haven't been up there, I would suggest to do that. It's a great, great event. Greater Hartford Open, Joe Proud was amazing to continue that. And then all of his friends and continue running that event, which has been a really long, strong, ongoing event, similar to Warwick. But you're right. We could come together for a more regional tour. It's the messaging, right? So when we were talking to the club and communicating, I always tried to express like, this event is bigger than us. So I'm 46 years old, and I have a lot of my friends who are in the master's age division, and they sometimes people say, well, let's offer MP40 in this Warwick A tier. And it's like, well, like, no, let's just keep it open, women and men, because this event is bigger than us. Hopefully this event will be going on for another decade or two. And, you know, the 13-year-old kid who's aspiring to be a pro who's growing up in Warwick will have a chance to compete in the Warwick Disc Golf Championship. So we're running this event for that. And I think if Mind Killer Great Hartford Open, I think that messaging is important. Like you said, it's hard to jump from right into the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Like there probably should be some type of regional tour to jump into before other people make that leap.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you're giving the players, but also like potential organizers or fundraisers, the opportunity to figure out how to do it on a small, manageable scale before having to go and compete in an environment that is maybe not more hostile, but it's a lot more difficult to stay with it.
Sure. So
you spoke about having a fund to compensate tournament directors and volunteers. Can you tell me why that's important?
I think after my 8th year of running the event, that Sunday night, I was just like, I'm in my mind. I'm done. Like I just spent a whole week prior, you know, going around collecting cash, exhausted, running the event. I'm like, I can't sustain this. And I talked to the club. I said, we need to outsource this stress and compensate for this. Again, our club, most disc golf was always built on volunteers. It's tricky. Like, do you pay a volunteer to TD, but you don't pay a volunteer to clean a fairway? Like, where do you draw that line? But we just got to a point in the sake of sustainability is that we have to be able to pay someone and hold that person accountable. But kind of like a business deal of saying, like, look, you need to be here at a certain time and do these following duties. And it's worked out great. And quite frankly, I wish we could pay these people even more.
And the PDGA does allow for that in their standards. Do you think that there could or should be room for that to happen at other events? For example, like, let's say you're running the Warwick Amateur Championships. If you have 144 players or more come in, you know, you're responsible for a lot of people's day. Historically, amateurs have been given, you know, trinkets and other player pack items, and, you know, they'll scream and shout at you if they don't feel like they've gotten equivalent value for that.
Right.
Certainly at the amateur, but also the pro level, isn't the experience of playing in a sanctioned event, isn't that worth something? There should be an opportunity for tournament directors to make some money off of giving a worthwhile experience to players.
Yeah, totally agree. The PGA for ball golf does it. I know that that they have a staff that's compensated. It's our own fault with disc golf that we're in this position. The mentality back in the early 2000s was always having to get over your value of your entry fee, and TDs were just giving and giving and giving. It's just not a sustainable model. So I think players realize now the attitude is changing that, yeah, you know, we're having this incredible experience on some of the best courses in the Northeast. These people are donating the days of their life to run these great events, they need to be compensated. You know, we know as we get older what our most valuable resource is, time. And so being compensated for that time, which no one's profiting, right? A few hundred dollars here or there is just covering basic living essentials these days. So I think also that attitude's changing, which I'm happy to see.
So you've also had the good fortune of Ryan Kenny and Joe Apples kind of able to fill in and take over what you felt like you were no longer able to in the TD realm. How does a club cultivate good quality volunteers without just overworking them?
Well, a few years back, we formed a board. So I think we have, in any given year, 150 to 180 paying members at $20 a piece. And everyone has opinions and ideas. And we decided to form a board. And I believe it's either 7 or 9 of us, where we get together monthly on a Zoom call, we're elected. And the idea is that members of the club are supposed to bring concerns or ideas to a board member, and then the board member brings that to our meeting, and then we hash it out and vote on it. So as the year goes by, certain people emerge as more volunteering than others, and they're nominated for board positions. And so someone like Ryan or Joe kind of stepped up to the plate in that area and fit into their just fit in for us, you know, better. And we try to recruit, the board tries to recruit other volunteers, maybe try to groom them for the TD role and just kind of cultivate it from the board level.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, Craig, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm so sad that I wasn't able to get to Warwick this year. I certainly hope to in 2024 and beyond. Can you leave us with some final thoughts of what tournament directors or local organizers can do to make their events able to endure for 15 to 20 plus years, even when the original organizers are no longer in that role?
Communicating through the club or the local volunteers, forming a committee, a board, sitting down, just like we're doing now, coming up with a plan, a sustainable plan, and really executing that, and not allowing the entire event to fall on one or two people. It has to be a kind of a shared effort. And then you'd be really surprised how much people will do and rally together if you share those responsibilities. Kind of really nice how it all comes together.
All right. Craig Cutler, everybody. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. We'll look forward to seeing you next year at the A-Tier. And for anyone who's following along, the Amateur Championships is this weekend. And that'll be played on the Warwick and Dan Doyle's Oasis course. So that should be some good entertainment as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can go look at coverage of the 2005 or 6 Skylands State Line Classic. It's on YouTube. It shows you what disc golf footage was like way back in the day, huh?
Right. I remember Matt Oram, I think 19 years old, was at the event. That's the first time we met him. And it's cool to see that he's still winning out there on the tour almost 20 years later.
Yeah, absolutely. And Warwick, not just one of my favorite places, but a pretty spectacular disc golf destination. Several disc golf courses with multiple configurations in a very small area.
So yeah, it's a must hit spot if you love disc golf and you want to travel to a beautiful place in New York. Warwick is A+.
Well, there you go. Thanks, Craig.
Okay, Andrew. Thanks. Have a good day.
That's all for this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast. But be sure to check out previous episodes and subscribe wherever fine podcasts are sold. Check out Fish Golf Broadcast hats and other apparel at discgolfbra.com and badger your friends until they listen too. Join us next time as I goad yet another guest into starting a fight with another touring player, campsite host, or toll booth attendant on the Fish Golf Broadcast.